The Guardian.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook if you sign up for a 2-week trial of their service. Audible has 40,000 titles available to download. For all the details, follow the links at guardian.co.uk/audible.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Football Weekly. Today, Sunderland give Premier League gin tonic. Chelsea torn a newer one by rampaging black cat. Cole burned by Danny Welbeck. Fourth third. Amazing match at Stamford Bridge given pod x-ray. Speaking of which, we ask, what happened to Wilkins? Dumped at half-time at Cobham like an old teabag. Elsewhere, there's Liverpool skillfully reversing back around that corner at Stoke. And Man City is Roberto Mancini trying to be fired. Plus all the rest of the weekend's highlights. Abroad, Sid's got the latest from the Liga and he might let us have a little. There's Serie A, the Milan derby, the Sicilian derby, Ibra Kung Fu, and will Rafa eat his Christmas cake? All of that, plus posts and Fabio's eclectic England call-up in today's Football Weekly. Hello there, everybody. Off we go, then, with a brand new week and a brand new panel. Barney Roney joining us.
Hi, James.
Hi, Barney. Also, Greg Ruffley.
Hello, James.
Lovely to see you, Greg, and lovely to see you, Barry Glendenning.
Pleasure to see you too, James.
All right. It sounds like you got something you wanted to say there, Barry.
Not really.
Okay. Sunderland-Chelsea. I bet you got something you'd like to say about that. 3-0.
Yes. Routine victory for Sunderland. They're always a force away from home.
Yes, as we saw at Newcastle.
Yeah.
How come? I mean, this is the thing, watching it, they filleted, I think that was your word, Barney, they filleted Chelsea.
Yeah.
Those three up front for the Black Cat. How come they don't play like this every week?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. They've kind of set the standard for themselves now, and you would hope that they would play that well, or somewhere approaching that well every week, but I doubted it. It was kind of like the perfect storm, you know, with Hurricane Grace off the Atlantic, the low pressure south of Sable Island ready to explode, and everything collided, and everything that could possibly go wrong for Chelsea did. You know, they were missing Terry, Essien and Frank Lampard. Everything that could possibly go right for Sunderland pretty much did. I mean, from 1 to 11, they were all excellent. Nobody had a bad game, and won 3-0 and probably could have won 5 or 6-0.
Plenty of people posting on Sunderland's performance. Mr. Gareth E. asks whether the rapid improvement to Sunderland's league performance has come because Darren Bent is not fit, so they have to tinker with the formation and others accept responsibility for goal scoring.
Well, I don't think that's why they tinkered with the formation. Bruce normally plays 4-5-1, and he's had Asamoah Gyan on the bench, and people were wondering why he wasn't playing him because he's Sunderland's most expensive signing, was great in the World Cup. But apparently he wasn't physically fit. He came back from the World Cup. I think he'd let himself go a bit. And he was doing some extracurricular training. Steve Bruce was out driving his car past him and saw him jogging out around the roads of Durham or Sunderland or wherever, and said, oh, that'll do for me, and threw him in the side. And then yesterday he played a 4-4-2 and decided to rip into Chelsea.
Steve Bruce was driving around the roads of some unspecified north-eastern town and saw Asamoah Gyan just jogging around the...
Yeah, he was out for a run.
I watched the Chelsea-Sunderland match yesterday, and I thought one of the main things for Sunderland, the 4-4-2 formation really did work, and Steve Bruce had obviously looked at how Liverpool had played against Chelsea. And for 4-4-2 to work against Chelsea, you need two really hard-working strikers. And in Gyan and Welbeck, they just didn't stop. They didn't stop running all game. And if anything, they were getting help. Jordan Henderson and Katamol in the midfield were just so much better than Zirkov.
I think you're right, yeah. Yeah. I mean, for Chelsea, the issue is how poor their midfield was. I mean, people have always talked about Chelsea having this spine in a slightly annoying and also nationalistic way. It was kind of, you know, they've got Terry and Lampard in there and sort of Drogba up front, this kind of strong spine. The only member of that not either absent or carrying a tropical disease on Sunday was Cech, who basically kept them in the game. And midfield looked really weak. I mean, Anua's goal was fantastic, but it was like he basically looked up and thought, well, I can just run through the middle of that lot.
Zirkov and Ramirez like cardboard cutouts when he went through in the middle. And you see, if you look at them in the middle, they've got absolutely no strength to them. They've got Mikel, who's supposed to be the holding player who can give them the bit of steel they need. But then Welbeck and Jan were coming back and harassing him off the ball. So it wasn't even up to the midfield to press him. It was the strikers who were
Mikel's just not in that class as well. He's not got the power of an Essien or, you know, Makaleli's positioning. He's just not good enough to play that role on his own for them, I don't think.
Mm.
Sunderland were 17-1 to win that game yesterday, and it was a bit of a weird price. I mean, obviously they
and you had money on it, didn't you?
I had a tenner on them, yeah. But I mean, when you put as many tenners on Sunderland at prices like that, I won't be long spending the 170 quid. But you know, apart from the aberration against Newcastle, they haven't been that bad this season. They've lost very little.
They've only lost to West Brom and Newcastle. Man United, Arsenal, Liverpool, Man City, Spurs and now Chelsea have all failed to beat them.
Yeah, and they've got a very strong defence, you know. Midfield is pretty robust as well. It's just scoring goals has been their problem. And that wasn't a problem for them yesterday, although they did. I was raging just before they scored at half-time or on the stroke of half time because they'd missed so many good chances, and I thought, oh, here we go again, they're going to get beaten in despite having put in a great performance.
Zenden was an astute buy as well for Sunderland because he's got all these young players and his attitude's first class, and I thought he had a very good game yesterday. And when Sunderland were under pressure, as Villa kind of capitulated against United, and we'll come to that, that was a lot of naivety from the young players who weren't holding the ball up, whereas Zenden kind of showed them the way to go. And I just think he's probably a very steady influence there for a lot of the younger players in the
Kieran
squad.
Richardson as well, his experience shone through. He was excellent throughout. All Sunderland's players were marvellous.
Very Moby bad indeed. Highlighting the use of Richardson to man mark Cashley.
And led to the third goal.
Yeah. There you go. Now, it's a shame about Ray, as I think it was the Lemonheads once, you know, entitled their album that. And then
Evan Dando.
Presciently so. Yeah, very much
so. Going,
so. I have no idea, but Ray Wilkins certainly isn't in a Chelsea sense. I know that everyone will have talked about this, but I don't think the question marks have in any way been answered. Well, it's not so much why he went, it's how he went. Just extraordinary story. This man who was very much a kind of, I think as much an ambassadorial figure for Chelsea and a good person to have around in PR terms. For him to get chucked out the way he did, at half-time of a training game, and not even, as Ancelotti has said, given the chance to say goodbye.
It's the kind of sacking you normally get for gross misconduct.
Yes.
Which is exactly kind of the opposite of, well, he was a kind of ambassador. And it's easy to underestimate the importance of that kind of role in football. But these are geographically centred institutions which have been massively transformed and turned into these kind of cosmopolitan entities. And Ray Wilkins was a link to Chelsea past.
Well, whether or not they still needed that role, I don't know. I mean, you could argue it either way. But as I say, reaching the decision that his contract might not be renewed is one thing, but telling him to clear out at half-time of a reserve game is
it's like
peculiar.
Those tango ads he used to be in where Napoleon came out with his big rubber orange hand and just rubbed it all over his face.
Do you think something like that may have been involved in it?
I would like to think so. That would be a great way to get handed your P45
right.
By Napoleon with a big orange rubber hand.
It's the cruelty of the PLC, isn't it? These clubs are built along those. If you get sacked in a bank now, you get handed your. They take your security pass and you get booted out. And that's how football clubs are structured now. They're structured by business people.
Unfortunately, it's not surprising that the teams at the top have just completely forgotten the roots. And they treat the fans that way as well, you know. So why wouldn't they treat a former great that way? And I don't know what he was offering Carlo Ancelotti as an in terms of tactical input as well. So.
But apparently Ancelotti went round to his house on Friday to see how he was and make sure there was no hard feelings.
The only suggestion I've heard vis-a-vis why he was, you know, escorted out at half-time, etc., was the fact that somebody said he'd actually been told the day before but had insisted on turning up anyway. So perhaps he was given his chance to say goodbye the day before. And
George Costanza school of... Yeah.
I have no idea, you know, and if Ray, if you're listening, then do get in touch.
Snuck in to get some Chelsea pens and stationery pad. Yeah.
I imagine he was very hurt.
I can imagine he was, poor chap.
You might get an entrance named after him now. I remember when I went some years ago, there was a Nigel Spackman entrance at Stamford Bridge.
It would have to be a side entrance, though, for Ray Wilkins.
I think there's still a Spackman lounge.
Is there?
Yeah.
He wasn't actually on the particularly good money. I mean, for his
350 grand a year.
Yeah, and his predecessor was on 1 million. So Wilkins was only on a third of that. But right. So it doesn't really...
Wilkins is less of a sort of hands-on coach. I mean, I think Clark was really taking first team. I don't know what Wilkins was exactly doing, but, you know, probably wasn't that.
Hmm. Before we move on to Liverpool, Greg, Barry, Bolo Zenden's embarrassing dad dance.
Yeah, when Asamo Gyan scored yesterday,
yeah.
He went and did a very rhythmic African dance at the corner flag and was yep. joined by Bolo Zenden, who sort of looked like a geography teacher at a fifth form disco. It was just one of the many match highlights for me.
Excellent stuff. Match highlights for you, Greg Ruffley, in Liverpool's trip to Stoke. Discuss.
Why is it that whenever I'm on Football Weekly, yeah. Liverpool lose?
Well, pretty much, you could turn up any week you like. And you've got a good statistical chance of...
Perhaps, but I mean, after the recent run and I was nowhere to be seen and then I'm back today.
Mm.
Well, first of all, I don't know why Hodgson dropped Martin Kelly, who's been playing well at right-back, and decided to throw Carragher there. And Carragher said 2 years ago that he can't play right-back anymore. He said he hasn't got the legs for it, and he's much more influential for Liverpool at centre-back. So that made no sense to me. And also, I think Hodgson needs to he needs to adapt his formation from game to game. It's one thing thinking, oh, well, we've done OK against Chelsea with this formation, but you've got to look at who you're coming up against next. And in Wigan and Stoke, they both had width and pace on the wings, so and we're playing four central midfielders in the middle, which is all very well against Chelsea, who don't have much pace themselves. But against Stoke, they've got Pennant and they've got Etherington. We're playing Morelles, Gerrard, Lucas, and Maxi Rodriguez. It's not the way to go.
Hodgson was always famed, though, as being one of the best prepared managers in terms of who he was facing next and tactically what changes he had to make.
He hasn't shown that at Liverpool so far.
But is
anyway.
It because of the lack of depth in the squad?
Yeah, there's an obvious lack of depth. And I do feel he's got a point when he says, well, we need to get more players in before you can judge this side. And the fans, it's kind of unfair to be... maybe chanting for Dalglish again at this moment in time when he's only had, 12 or 13 games. But he's so associated with Hicks and Gillett because he was brought in under that regime that he seems doomed.
And is that serious? They seriously think that Kenny Dalglish is going to come in and be the manager?
Isn't it just an easier thing to chant than anyone but Hodgson?
Yeah. It's a nice chant as well. It sounds good.
I mean, there's no other obvious candidates as managers who could come in. And with Liverpool, there is this thing that Dalglish has got unfinished business. And, you know, perhaps as fans, just to see Kenny Dalglish in the dugout one more time, whether we got walloped 7-0 by Newcastle following it, would be an amazing experience and something that would feel like it's complete again.
Mm.
But going forward long term, I personally think maybe you should just give Hodgson this season, because one more win, Liverpool are fifth, possibly one more defeat, Liverpool are in the relegation zone possibly, so it's a pivotal moment in the season, and maybe over the next seven or eight games we'll see whether Hodgson's going to last beyond January.
Alright, Glenn Johnson coming out and accusing Hodgson of being a boring manager, is that right?
Yeah, Glenn Johnson's people, apparently.
Oh, okay.
Glenn Johnson. Yeah, he's accused him of being a boring manager. But I mean, what was Benitez when Johnson was there? Johnson,
I suppose.
Well, he was picking Johnson, and but this season, Johnson's been absolutely dreadful. I mean, he's like Hodgson had a point to pick him out for criticism, because he's looked stoned in half the games he's played. His touch has been so poor. He's turned around and kind of looked a bit lost running back. I don't know what he's been.
Obviously, he's not. It just looks.
Oh, it looks yeah. looks that way. Looks yeah. as, looks as if he's not stoned. I'm not right. suggesting anything at all. No.
Okay. And well, that's interesting. Liverpool have only won two of their last 16 away games. You probably know. Says Sport News editor Mark Redding that in the last six seasons, Hodgson has only won in six Premier League seasons 11 away matches. That's rubbish.
In six seasons. So
apparently
who's,
so.
Who's that with then? Because didn't he only have two?
Well, Blackburn, Fulham and Liverpool.
Yeah.
Fulham don't win many away games, and Blackburn had a terrible season and he's only just got started at Liverpool.
I mean, he's probably had a lot of draws with Fulham and Blackburn, which would be seen as successful away games.
But I think there's no doubt he has a problem adapting his tactics for playing away from home. I mean, that was always the problem with Fulham, very good at home. I think it's a bit unfair to say why did he bring in Carragher? And then accuse him of not tailoring his tactics to the team he's facing, because he brought Carragher in to combat the fact that there's a big aerial threat and that those long throws come in and you're going to have Carragher on the back post rather than...
Martin Kelly's taller than Carragher, though. Martin Kelly's 6'3".
Yeah, but
he's Carragher would have played anyway.
Carragher's an experienced central defender. I mean, come on, if you wanted someone to defend against Kenwyn Jones, you wanted Martin Kelly or Jamie Carragher.
Yeah, but Carragher would be at centre back. That's
He's picked an extra centre back to combat the aerial threat. I mean, that is tailoring your tactics to the team you're facing.
And it worked so well against
It just didn't
long
work,
throws.
Yeah. I mean, they scored a goal from the long throw.
Which
they actually don't often do. Yeah. It's quite a rare thing for Delap's throws to...
Yeah.
It's the first time they've scored from a throwing man in 23 games.
23 games, correct. Correct. Wow.
It's funny, I was at Wolves, Bolton, and Bolton spent most of the first half getting Sam Ricketts to hurl the ball in the direction of the Wolves penalty area. But these were really rubbish, really floaty, long, high...
John Arderiza was doing that for Roma against Juventus, actually. To some effect.
But his throws are quite flat and fast.
Yeah, he's got a proper throw on him, actually.
Yeah, Ricketts is terrible. The ball's just in the air for most of the
If we needed someone on the pod to take long throw-ins, who do you think would be?
Paul Doyle.
I think Sean Ingle.
I'd say Sean Ingle.
He's sort of quite lithe and wiry.
He's quite elastic, isn't he? Yeah.
He is quite long-armed. Dragging along the floor. is there room in this part one for Man City? Probably not. That'll have to wait, listeners. A little bit of music and then we'll talk about it, which will make all the difference. Did you know, Barry, that the odds on Liverpool winning the title are now longer than them getting relegated?
I didn't know that.
But you're not that surprised, are you?
Well, my thoughts on Liverpool's chances of finishing inside the top seven this season are well documented.
Wouldn't you find that for almost every team? Because only one team can win the title, whereas three get relegated.
Curse you, Barney.
I can tell you a more interesting stat. At half-time in the Sunderland-Chelsea game yesterday, Chelsea were still favourites to win.
Really?
Yeah.
What was the score at half-time?
1-0.
Right, okay.
Well, that's because nobody had scored at Stamford Bridge for about 30 games. I mean, they are absolutely awesome at home. I mean, let's pay tribute to their amazing record.
Yeah, let's. Anyway, now Man City.
Percentages, don't they?
Yep. Yeah. Man City, another team with an amazing record. Truly. He's 0-0 at home to bottom three side Birmingham. And he takes off Tevez, who he calls the only man on our team who can score goals, for a defensive midfielder. Is Roberto Mancini trying to be fired?
I don't know if he's trying to be fired. There were some...
Can you think of any other explanation for that?
Some more indignant Manchester City fans who took exception to this being pointed out as further evidence of Mancini's extreme conservatism said that Tevez was injured. But Tevez's reaction upon being taken off was one of total bewilderment.
Yeah,
it seemed to
like
me,
him
anyway.
Never want to come off. I mean, they did have Rocky Santa Cruz on the pitch at the time, and Barry is
that relevant?
An England international. he's a kind of striker, isn't he? But maybe there is a part of him saying, don't tell me how to manage. He's been criticised for his cautious approach so much.
I think that's definitely true, and it's almost like he's gambling and he's losing, and he tries to pull out one last big bet, and if it comes off, then the fans will think, oh, actually, he's a genius after all.
There's a bit of the Rafa Benitez about it. I mean, he was incredibly stubborn about his methods, wasn't he? And refused.
Well, the metaphors I'd use to describe Mancini's managerial approach, gambling, is not the first one that springs to mind.
I'm not a gambling man.
No. If the season ended today, I'd be happy. That's what he said. I'm just wondering. Because
I think if the season ended today, or Manchester City season ended today, we'd all be happy.
Yeah, right. No, I just wonder if Roberto, who's admitted that he's not desperately happy in Manchester, is just thinking about the kind of mega million payoff.
Well, he meant that they're in fourth position.
Yeah, I know what he meant, but I'm wondering if deep in his unconscious he was actually saying...
It wouldn't surprise me. It's a depressing project to be attached to at the moment. I'm sure it is. He's got very little... People keep saying it's not a question of when Man City wins silverware. It's a question of when. It's a sort of ludicrous billionaire-fed enterprise that no doubt becomes fairly depressing to be involved with.
Well, it doesn't have to be, though. Everybody wants Ian Holloway to take over. I'm sure that would be
great fun, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Hilarious.
Like Brewster's Millions or something, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
He's
not as nice as everyone says, Ian Holloway. I mean, he has a very hard side to him. He threatening to throw a cup of tea at some reporters the other day. He can be quite short shrift.
What he actually said was that if you think that about me, come round to my house and we'll have a cup of coffee and it'll probably end up in your lap. That's the thing, he runs away with himself.
Holloway from Lahore.
But he is not a lovable, soft character. He's
I
all
think
a bit
he
of a,
is. Did well, you ever see the documentary about him when he underwent counselling for anger management. And before he got home each, or when he got home each day, there was he had to paint a picture in his hallway before entering the house. And, you know, sort of this picture would reflect how he felt in the day. And he really got into it, you know, and calmed down a lot because he was bonkers at the time.
Is this what your naked doodle of Sid was about?
Could have been, yeah. Okay. Sid was most perturbed to hear about that.
Strangely, yeah.
Oh, sorry, I was just going to say my first ever sort of journalistic assignment was in interviewing Ian Holloway when he was at QPR for When Saturday Comes. It was sort of before he'd become Ian Holloway, the amusing man with coffee table books full of his aphorisms. And it was quite an odd thing. I mean, I assumed it was quite normal at the time, but I sat in his office for about an hour and a half. And he was wearing, I mean, he was wearing this very tightly buttoned-up leather jacket, and he strode about just talking endlessly. It was like someone trying out for a character. He was sort of becoming Ian Holloway before my eyes. And by the end of it, he was more and more sort of David Brentish. It was very strange. I remember thinking, he's a very strange man. I mean, he was very, very nice.
Mm.
But I felt a bit like he was trying on his sort of Ian Holloway was all Gummidge head right in front of me, and here he is now, like a fully developed, amusing, zany character.
Interesting.
Was he West Country then, or was he actually like a Cockney or something, and that's all part of the act?
He's pretty West Country. I mean, very nice, don't get me wrong, but it was pre-zany, and we could feel it sort of starting to take hold.
Hmm.
When he was out of work there after getting sacked by Leicester, he built a very nice chicken coop in his house, yeah.
All right, then. Anyway, now Man City, if anyone was it, six times all season. It's rubbish, isn't it? Blackpool, just on the subject of Ian Holloway, had a 0-0 draw, a very exciting 0-0 draw, they say, those who saw it, at West Ham, who have got, 3 points from the potential nine that they were supposed to get seven from. But no sign of Avram Grant walking just yet. I can't imagine there's a big queue to take his place either. Let's move on anyway. Arsenal, 2 points behind at the top of the table. Arsene believes, do we?
Yes.
Yes, we do.
I'd kind of like to. I'm not an Arsenal fan, but I am a fan of the way they run their club, and I think it would be quite nice if we're going to have this Premier League, which is so kind of revenue-driven and with kind of this rarefied group of clubs at the top. I think it'd be quite nice if the Arsenal model was rewarded with a Premier League title.
Did you know they have the second meanest defence away from home in the league? That's still pretty impressive, isn't it?
Where are you pulling all these stats out of?
That one was from Parisa Ben, but I can tell you, we all know that they're top of the dirty play table, aren't they?
But that's not a surprising stat, because they're also second in the league. So you'd expect them, they'd have sort of be second. Second is kind of their base
You're
level.
You're stat kryptonite, aren't
but
you?
But isn't that, wouldn't you expect them to be second in most things if they're also second?
Right.
Do you know they've got the second highest number of points in the Premier League?
Have they?
Yeah.
That's not surprising, because they've got the second meanest defence. I reckon that... away from
the
anyway,
best team in the Premier League as well.
Right now.
Pod Gold. Listeners, thanks for your patience. They've got Spurs visiting on Saturday. Moving along, Man United at Villa. How did they get away with that then?
I think Villa were just a little bit too inexperienced.
You mentioned naivety before when you talked about Bola Zenden.
Yeah. Mark Albrighton, who was absolutely wonderful in the match, played very well. There's a couple of occasions when they were 2-0 up and he'd get the ball on the right. And it was really nice to see him being so honest and trying to go for it. And he played a few early crosses in, hoping to maybe find the third goal, which would have seen United off. But they cut the ball out and broke, and this happened on a couple of occasions, and United came back and got the two goals, as we know. But they had Barry Bannon, Jonathan Hogg and Mark Albrighton playing, who were all 20 years old, which
That's
is
brilliant, isn't it?
It's really, really nice to see.
The attack as well, Delfonso, he's great. You know, it's just great to see Julio playing these players.
Well, because we were being a little bit disparaging about the Julio project on Thursday. I'm just wondering if it's actually... something which is suddenly going to bloom into life when one or two players return and when players have a little bit more time with the manager, that suddenly Villa could have an amazing second half to the
season.
He's
a manager who trusts a young player, and I think Steven Gerrard wouldn't be the player he is today if Gerard Houllier hadn't put his faith in him when he first came through at Liverpool.
We talked about his time in France as well, but Houllier was the man who brought through that golden generation, you know, before things turned a bit sour. He's obviously very good with young players, and you know, they make them believe in themselves.
Mm. You like a stat, Barney. Try this one from Sean Ingle, from the pen of Sean Ingle. In 2010, Man United have been behind 14 times, and they've not lost 9 of those. So they've rescued the situation 9 times. Chelsea, by contrast, behind 11 times, lost 10 of them. It's Man United's character right there in numbers.
I was a bit bee in my bonnet about one thing in that game. It's when Mark Albrighton scored, he ran to the crowd to celebrate, got booked. Mm-hmm. Nemanja Vidic did the exact same thing, didn't get booked.
And the reason
he was on a yellow card, so... But it's just total inconsistency, and you would have to say probably because he plays for Manchester United.
Wasn't the reason the referee gave something like he got pushed into the crowd, so it wasn't actually his... It wasn't his action, it was the play behind him. Mm. So I went and booked the play behind him then or something, you know, if that's true, which
booked
obviously...
the crowd?
Yeah.
Book the crowd?
Book everyone.
Right.
Booking a player for celebrating with the crowd's absurd, isn't it?
Yes.
Very much so. I think we can all agree on that.
Well, they have this nonsense that, oh, you could incite a riot or something, but you're not going to incite a riot if you're... celebrating with your own fans, and plus the crowd aren't legally obliged to riot anyway just because a footballer has done something to change their mood.
Mm. Have that FIFA suits in neon.
Yeah, in your faces.
There's more of that where that came from. Barney, you went to Bolton.
To Wolves.
Oh,
Wolves,
right.
Bolton.
Thank goodness, because the game was played at Molyneux, wasn't it? It would have looked very
unhappy there to get back. Yeah. It was a really good game.
Yeah, and you were there for the Elmander goal.
Yeah, what a brilliant goal that was. Mm. It was actually really, really a moment of high class. And
were you watching, or had you gone for a pie or something?
No, at that point, I was actually paying attention.
Okay.
So it was fortunate. But no, it was brilliant. I mean, he turned on a sixpence and won... quick touch to set it up, and the whole thing took about half a second, but it actually quietened the stadium. There was a general kind of hush of appreciation of a genuinely brilliant moment. And the sad thing is about that Elmander's been in the news a lot because he's probably going to leave Bolton, because I mean Bolton have got a great squad, but they're £93 million in debt.
Yeah, how did they get £93 million in debt?
Well, it's the wage bill. They wanted some players to leave and they didn't. They haven't spent that much. I mean, Elmander's the record signing, but they've got a big wage bill and they don't have a huge turnover, and they're just too good for their own good, basically. It's a real shame because they're a very good team.
How do you mean they're too good for their own good?
Well, they've got a team that's so good they can't afford to pay their wages.
Right.
They're going to have to get rid of Gary Cahill.
They basically pay too much money in wages.
Yeah.
Well, that's all the money they got off the likes of Anelka and Kevin Nolan. I would have thought that would pay for...
And for just being in the Premier League anyway.
Where does it all go?
Something doesn't add up.
I really don't know. But it's a massive debt. And it's a real shame because under Coyle, they're a really good team and a really good team to watch.
Barry, are you going to say something? No? Okay.
Have you been following Kevin Davis on Twitter?
No.
It's very interesting, actually, because a lot of the footballers on Twitter, you know, you sort of think because they're all multimillionaire footballers that they just spend all day groupies and buying mink robes and things like that, expensive jewel encrusted crowns. But Kevin Davis, he's regular Twitter user, and his life is just—he's obviously a very content family man, and his tweets about the mundanities of everyday life is quite interesting. See that his life is as boring as everyone else's.
My dad's wife works in Bolton, she used to have a contact at the stadium.
All right.
And she's heard that Kevin Davis is horrendously under the thumb. He really struggles to get out, and he's always...
Mrs. Davis?
Yeah, Mrs. Davis is...
Well, funny enough, he did tweet last night that he had a couple of days off and was waiting to see what jobs the missus had to do for him,
really?
Or had for
did
him to do around the house.
His first tweet after he heard he wasn't in the England squad was, "Oh, time for a beer." And then around about the same time, Capello slams booze culture. So it could appear... I don't know if the two were linked.
Was he perhaps being sarcastic?
Possibly. I'm sure he has that in his locker.
Yeah.
There you go. What was the score in that game?
It was a 3-2 thriller, but Bolton went 3-0 up, and they really were very good.
Wolves beaten at home like Kevin Davis.
They've lost eight times in last ten games, Wolves, and they're probably going to get relegated.
Oh,
our listeners will be very happy to hear that Davis's youngest slept through the night for the first time last night.
All right.
Last night being Monday night.
How old is Davis's youngest?
He didn't say.
All right, okay. Johan Elmander, one final thing. This extraordinary renaissance of the player. That's his sixth goal of the season. Should we put that down to what? Is it Owen Coyle working his magic? Is that the
kind of... I think it is Owen Coyle. He's one of those... He's got that sort of Harry Redknapp thing of making the players believe in themselves. And, you know, he obviously sends them out. There are quite a few players in that team, like Lee and Stuart.
He's not very good, though, is he?
Stuart Holden. Well, I mean, he played very well on Saturday.
I'm getting nods. People think he is.
Yeah, he is good. Okay. These are two players who might have easily come to the Premier League with a bit of an inferiority complex. But,
right.
Coyle has really got them playing, and Holden was fantastic.
Isn't Fabrice Muamba really? Yeah, he's good as well. Also, I've seen him on a couple of occasions, and he's everything you want from that holding midfielder.
He's in a sort of career
wins
high,
the ball and then gives it very, you know, very quickly.
And against Wolves, it was very, you know, it was very concussive, and Muamba really, really bossed the midfield. He's in a really good spell of form. He played for England under 21s a lot of times actually, and was an Arsenal player. I mean, he's a potential England ace of the future.
Oh. In the defensive midfielder role?
Yeah, he's very good in that role.
Hmm, interesting. I tell you what, we might just quickly throw in a bit of an England call-up mention at this, the end of part two, because, of course, midweek friendlies coming up for most of the planet. All sorts of exciting games. You've got your Brazil, Argentina and Qatar. You've got some other ones as well. Who are England playing? France. There are one or two surprises in Fabio's selection. Of course, he's without Rooney, Defoe, Zamora and Andy Carroll, who he wanted to call up. So he's gone with Jay Bothroyd and Carlton Cole. Now, Jay Bothroyd, a surprise because he plays in the Championship and wasn't good enough, presumably, for the Premier League. And Carlton Cole, well, ditto, really.
I wouldn't say Bothroyd's problems were that he wasn't good enough. He just was a reputation for being a little bit difficult.
Oh, really? I met him, actually, years ago, and he was a lovely,
lovely wasn't difficult
chap.
At all.
No, he went to Perugia. And he scored two goals in his first two games, and you know the Italian press went very crazy about him. And we went to meet him. Perugia was lovely, very nice.
Well, he's got a lot of talent, and hopefully
he's still quite young.
Yeah, why not pick him? He's scoring lots of goals.
All right. What about Carlton Cole though?
Well, I mean, he's not been in very good form. That's really strange.
One goal in 25.
It seems a case of really going out of your way not to pick Kevin Davis.
Yeah.
Who Capello's obviously decided isn't an international
Maybe
footballer.
Mrs. Davis had a word. He's not leaving the house. He's got things to do.
That's to fix the stairs.
Yeah.
You wonder if Bothroyd might turn out to be Capello's Carlton Palmer.
Oh, now the Bothroyd thing, I'm just thinking, he was sent packing from Arsenal because he threw his shirt at coach Don Howe in his youth team days.
Yeah. No, he can't do that.
You certainly can't.
I've knocked his hat off.
Don Howe and his hats.
Mm. Happy dear. Days, eh?
Happy
days. I would have picked Jarvis of Wolves.
Oh, where am I?
Ahead
Jarvis?
Of that was the Milner and Walcott, who play for big clubs intermittently.
Mm.
Whereas Jarvis is playing every week and playing very well.
For Wolves?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the buzz phrase of last week, wasn't it? Matt Jarvis for England.
Well, he's a really good left winger, and he's a very hard-working young Englishman. It would have been a good thing to give him a call-up.
Yeah, fair enough. But Jordan Henderson did get a call-up then, did he?
Yeah, he's going to Manchester United soon, isn't he? Yeah.
Is he? Is that right, Barry?
So they say. Well, Sir Alex Ferguson has asked Steve Bruce to keep him apprised of any Jordan Henderson-related transfer speculation so that he can have first dibs on him. But they reckon... Chelsea and Manchester City are both sniffing around as well, and Liverpool apparently, but he probably wouldn't go to Liverpool.
Is he a number 10?
Well, he wears the number 10.
Right.
Yeah. He's a kind of box-to-box. He's a bit like a lawnmower. Gets up and down the field and has a great engine.
Right, okay.
There's a lot of Sunderland fans who emailed in when I did the minute-by-minute yesterday, and they were saying they'd cash in on him and take the money because they could do more with that money and strengthen the squad in other areas, which I found quite surprising, considering you need to have more English players. And apparently Sunderland have got, you know, they've got enough for the quota, but I'd have thought they just want to keep somebody if he's playing well for them. And he's a local lad as well.
Mm-hmm. Surprising. That's it for part two. And we'll be back in a second or two with the latest from the continent. Sid Lowe.
Hello, James. How are you?
I'm ever so well. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thanks, yeah.
Great. Where are you?
I'm in Madrid.
What are you wearing? No, I'm not going to go down that route. Stop it. That's producer Ben. Sid, let's talk about Barcelona, their win against Villarreal, the second against third match. 3-1 win for Barca. People going crazy about Messi again. Describe.
Yeah. And rightly so, I think. I thought it was a brilliant game. And I must admit that I've been getting... I wouldn't quite go so far as to say bored, but very nearly bored and a bit frustrated with a lot of the games over the last 4 or 5 weeks, because I think, generally speaking, it's not been particularly exciting. It's been a little too easy for Madrid and Barcelona. I've sat through quite a lot of poor football. And this weekend was a real kind of sense of, wow, this is what it's all about. It was an absolutely brilliant game between Villarreal and Barcelona. Both of them played fantastic football. It is going to be a two-horse race now, but certainly Villarreal, the third horse, are very, very good indeed. And there were three really brilliant goals of the four. The first from David Villa was superb. Neil Miles was a great goal. And Messi's, I thought, was sensational. Messi's record now is ridiculous. He scored in seven consecutive games. He's got 51 goals in 2010, and I think I'm right in saying that he's now scored 65 in his last 65 matches for Barcelona.
That's crazy. Who's that in the background, Sid?
Well, you can probably guess. Stella.
Oh, nice one.
She always does this, you know. You get this impression of her as always barking and always being a pain in the arse, but actually she sits there silently until the phone rings and it's like, aha, is that James?
Yeah, it certainly is, Estella. Real Madrid still top, though, Sid.
Yeah, and this is the thing as well. I actually think Sporting played much as they do in most games. They were aggressive, they were physical. But Madrid, I got a feeling that Madrid quite enjoyed it. And of course, Mourinho is more than capable of building a side that can end up that. And there's a very telling moment in the very last minutes, which is when Sporting had a player sent off. Madrid had scored in the 82nd, I think, with Gonzalo Higuain. Botir was sent off in the last minute, having fouled Ronaldo. Ronaldo kind of tumbled, got up to his feet, and almost like a gorilla, stuck his chest out and started hitting his chest, shouting, more, more, kind of, you know, bring it on then. Come on, is that all you've got? And I got the feeling that there was a real sense of satisfaction from Real Madrid for having won the game.
We're all doing that before the podcast, exactly that same maneuver.
It's almost like a pre-pod hacker, isn't it, that you kind of go in there and psych yourselves out.
Speaking of pod rituals, can I just ask, Barry, what are you doodling today? Can you show the class?
It's just a circle with a blue triangle in it.
Go on, let's see.
Is that some kind of secret message for the Masons?
I don't know.
Are you part of a Mason?
Greg, what do you think? Is it a very unhappy elephant? What's going on, though?
I've drawn a very hairy man.
Have you? Yeah. All right. Right. Okay, I haven't drawn anything.
I've done a series of spikes.
A series of spikes.
Yeah.
All right, listeners. That's something for you to ponder on. Anyway, Sid, there you go. Ronaldo enjoying, his confrontation with the meaty boys of Gijón. All right, well, just to finish off, quick question from Formica Atomica, who says, any chance the excellent Fernando Llorente could join Madrid? And are there any politics involved with him being Basque and all? Any join Madrid and your dead fans like we might have here, says Formica Atomica.
No, there won't be a problem from the Madrid point of view. There'll be a problem from Athletic's point of view. They'll be very, very disappointed to see him go. I think there's a good chance of him going. Madrid are certainly interested. His buyout clause is just about low enough that it could be paid if needs be. I think it's at 36 million euros. He's not, strictly speaking, Basque. He's from La Rioja. According to Athletic, Bill Bao's version of their rules, he's fine to play for them, not least because he was brought up as a footballer in the Basque country and because he was part of their youth system. There wouldn't be any problem from Real Madrid fans' point of view, not least because A, he's not entirely Basque, B, I don't think anywhere near a significant enough number of Real Madrid fans are bigoted enough for that to worry them at all. They've had Basque players before. He's won the World Cup with Spain, and bottom line, he's a very good footballer.
Sid Lowe in Spain. Now, some big matches elsewhere in another of Europe's top leagues. Barry?
Well, it wasn't strictly a league. It was the FAI Cup final, which is like the Irish FA Cup, which was very exciting this year because it was Sligo Rovers, like sort of horny-handed, craggy Islanders from the east or the west coast.
Seamus Coleman's old team.
And they were playing Metropolitan, Sophisticat, Shamrock Rovers from Dublin on the east coast. So it was like the American rap wars of the 90s. But it was a nil-nil draw and went to penalties. And
very much like the old rap wars of the 90s,
And Sligo goalkeeper Kieran Kelly saved four penalties in a row.
Wow.
To win it for his team.
Four penalties in a row?
Yeah, so I don't know if anyone...
Kevin Kelly?
Kieran Kelly. So I think actually Sam Allardyce used to manage Sligo Rovers.
Did
and
he?
So did... Laurie Sanchez, definitely managed Sligo Rovers.
Is this a huge result for Sligo Rovers, or is it just another bit of silverware?
To be honest, I suspect it is a big result for them.
I've doodled a picture of Barney naked.
All right. Mm-hmm.
I've just coloured in Kevin McCarra's face.
I think you've done him a grave injustice there.
I don't think I have.
I'll take that. That'll be fine.
Whose face have you coloured in?
Kevin McCarra. I've made him look like one of those creatures out of Avatar. It's surprisingly easy.
That's really good.
Yeah. Thanks, and Greg has now drawn a picture of a wizard smoking a big split.
That's how I was feeling when I was listening to Sid Lowe. Like I was under a hat with a huge joint.
I like that.
You can't encourage that kind of thing, Greg.
He's not encouraging it.
Yes, you are. Draw some bars over that.
Yeah. kids, if you're listening, yeah. don't wear a wizard's hat and smoke big bifters.
No. Especially not when listening to Sid. Okay. Barry, you've got to go because you're going to go and do a small talk with...
TV's Ray Stubbs.
I think, yeah.
So, yeah, I better dash because I think Raymondo will be calling me in about 3 minutes.
Stubbsy, please.
Stubbsy.
Yeah.
I've never met him before. I don't feel in a position to be that familiar with him.
Hmm. He's a very nice man. He loves Guardian journalists. Good luck with that.
Who doesn't, eh? Best of luck with that, Barry. Don't worry. Thank you. You can listen back to my Italian roundup later on.
I can't wait.
Yeah. And or read Palabandini's excellent review of the Milan Derby, which was played this weekend on a big weekend in Italy. We had the Milan Derby, we had Juventus Roma. It's just Barry who's leaving, Barney, not everybody else. Yeah. Juve Roma, Milan Derby, Sicilian Derby. What a weekend. And Lazio against Napoli is second versus third. What do you want to hear about first, Greg?
I'd love to hear about the Milan derby where the pressure is mounting on Rafael Benitez.
Well, it is, you know, because there's this phrase, especially in Milanese football, is he going to eat his panettone? Panettone being, you know, the classic kind of candied bread that, you know, comes out of Milanese ovens. It looks like he's had a lot already since producer then.
Always a disappointment.
It's a candied bread.
Do you think? I really like panettone, actually, but the mass-produced panettone...
Yeah, probably the good ones are good.
Yeah, the good ones has that kind of slightly bitter... you know, in much the same way that a good marmalade has a bitter, Moorish quality to it, which, the, you know, the one off the shelf perhaps doesn't have. But anyway, I'm a big fan of panettone. If you're finding it dull or too buttery, I recommend toasting it. Right. And if you're finding that a little bit too dull, then cut a hole in your toasted panettone and stick a bit of ice cream in the middle.
I'm always tempted to just stick my hand in and pull out a big clump.
You can do that as well. Yeah. It's panettone. Yeah. Use it as you wish. Whether Rafa Benitez will have the chance to use any of these handy Christmas tips is debatable because, as I say, there is this phrase, will he eat his panettone, meaning will he be gone by Christmas? And I believe that today is the first time that we've had a will Rafa eat his panettone comment in the papers. The Milan derby last night, Sunday night, and a 1-0 win for Milan. Not a spectacular game, but pretty entertaining one all the same. There's plenty of incident. Ibrahimovic's kung fu challenge, or taekwondo challenge, strictly speaking, on Materazzi, which left Materazzi hospitalised. He basically leapt him with his leg out, and he missed him with the leg, but he got him with the elbow follow-up to the head. And there is a bit of previous between those two, so although Ibrahimovic has apologised and said it's just one of those things that happened, I think that Ibra might have been... There was a thing... You remember when last season when Balotelli started acting up, and as he left the field having thrown his jersey on the pitch, Materazzi, who's a kind of inter stalwart, followed him, and they had an altercation in the tunnel, and there was this suggestion that maybe Materazzi had hit Balotelli. And Ibrahimovic, who at the time was playing for Barcelona, came out and said, oh, if that was me, I'd have smacked Materazzi, but good. So there's a suggestion that it's probably a little bit of ill feeling. So it was a 1-0 win for Milan, despite the fact that they had, Abate was sent off for an incident which really should have seen the interplayer Pandev sent off. Pandev pushed him over, but Abate got so upset when he stood up that the referee got confused.
That's the opposite of what happened last season, isn't it? When Inter went down to 10 men.
And then won 2-0, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, so many things are different now to the old days under Mourinho, as everybody's saying. Benitez insists that this is because his team are completely knackered and that he wants reinforcements and even the players want reinforcements because they can't go on. But
That sounds very familiar.
Yeah, but they are. When you look at them, I mean, he's missing a whole load of players. He's having to field or choosing to field a lot of young ones who are... I mean, for example, Coutinho yesterday was basically tickling Milan's back line. And Milan's back line, although Silva played really well, Nesta had a good game. They're not the most rock-solid of European defences, but Inter just couldn't produce anything against them. And Schneider looks really under the weather. Basically, all Milan had to do was Marchetto, and that was Inter dealt with. So there you go. Benitez is now 6 points behind Milan. Milan are topping the table. Behind them are Lazio, 1 point behind. Then you've got a 4-point gap to a group of four teams within 2 points of each other. Napoli, Juventus, and then Inter a point behind them. And then Roma another point behind Inter. Roma had a very creditable 1-1 draw at Juventus. I think they were moral winners as well because Juve just sat back and defended even though they were at home. And Roma... They scored one, but they couldn't find the second. They couldn't break down Juve's back line. So there you go. Anyway, in other news, the Sicilian derby, should mention that. Palermo, huge win for them over Catania. And Javier Pastore, who everyone's talking about as being a big transfer target for Barcelona, who's a kind of Riquelme-esque playmaker type fellow. He scored a hat-trick. First time anyone's ever done that in the Palermo-Catania clash. And Bingo the Dog says, Jimbo, as part of your European roundup, can you please mention one of the nicest guys of Italian calcio, or at least that's how he comes across, Luciano Spalletti, who's just won the Russian title with Zenit St. Petersburg, making it a double of championship and cup. We'd love to see him back in Italy soon. Imagine the war of the waiters, the Spanish one v. the Italian one. What a match. I have to say, if he was coming back, and you know, the Russian season just ended, that Benitez's spot there on the Inter bench wouldn't be the strangest place to see him.
Is he the bald dude who used to...
He's the bald dude, but no less attractive for all that, Barney, who transformed Roma into the strikerless formation that really wowed European football, especially when they went to Old Trafford and got hammered 7-1, of course. How we laughed.
Don't you think Benitez is... like, his position at Inter is so difficult because... Mourinho, the squad is exactly the same, and all that can be the difference is what the manager does for the players. So therefore, you look at Jose Mourinho, he'd get that same squad of players, even though they were tired, to run through walls for him.
Yeah.
Whereas Benitez just can't do that with his players. He's not the kind of, you know, arm around the shoulder, tell you how brilliant you are type of manager, is he? So
he's on a hiding to nothing.
He really is.
Yeah, I fear so. And it doesn't look like he's going to win any popularity contests in Milan anytime soon, as opposed to Max Allegri, who's now benching star names left, right and centre. He had Pirlo on the bench on the weekend. Ronaldinho's been dropped, and his Milan team are doing much better as a result.
How's Pato doing?
Well, Pato, that's the other thing we should mention. Of course, this happened just after Thursday's pod. Pato's out for the next 6 weeks. There are two players injured in last Wednesday's game. Pato out for the next 6 weeks. Inzaghi, who leapt for a ball but fell awkwardly as he landed and has done his ligaments again, his knee ligaments. Season over. He's 37. It's terribly sad news.
He made the mistake of actually jumping for a ball. I mean, why start now?
I don't know if that's entirely fair, Barney.
Just hang around in an offside position and the ball will eventually fall to you and you can stick it in the net.
Well, anyway, poor old Pippo. I know he's a regular listener, so get well soon, Super Pippo, because... Calcio really wouldn't be Calcio without you, you know. That's he's one of the great names of the Italian game. We've been banging on about him in the last couple of pods, so probably just leave it with a big get well soon and, you know, rule out his comeback at your peril. Yeah. Now, our very own comeback will be on Thursday when, oh, look at this, we've got Owen Gibson, who's going to be telling us all about the FIFA World Cup shenanigans. Woof. Kevin McCarrow is going to be telling us about the England game. Slightly less woof, you know, with all due respect to Kevin, just because it's an England-friendly. And also we're going to be previewing something called the MLS Cup Final between FC Dallas and Colorado Rapids. Can these teams actually exist? Is this a wind-up? We shall see. Dallas apparently stunned LA Galaxy 3-0 in a dramatic Western Conference Final just Sunday night. Also, Barry will be in. So it's a heady combination, a heady cocktail, perhaps you might say, of pod ingredients. Do join us for that next Thursday. In the meantime, thanks Barney Roney for that and much, much more. Producer Ben and Greg Ruffley too, and you, the listener. Have a lovely week. We'll speak to you on Thursday.
Don't forget to start your free 14-day trial of audible.co.uk and to download your free audiobook. Head to guardian.co.uk/audible.
The Guardian.